Seneca 13, the Serenus Trilogy. Hi everyone, and welcome back to this podcast series on the life of Lucius Annaeus Seneca. Today's podcast is going to be a relatively short one. It will cover three works of Seneca's that I believe had to have been written somewhere in the period between his recall from exile in late AD 48, early AD 49, and the death of Claudius and accession of Nero in late AD 54. There's a massive amount of controversy about exactly when the three works I'm going to talk about were composed, but I'll explain the reasons for my suggested time frame as we go along. The actual content of the three pieces, the nuts and bolts of the narrative, is not particularly relevant to the flow of this podcast series, so I won't spend too much time on it. It's not so much that the books don't contain items of interest, only that that interest would probably only rock the boats of students of philosophy and those of you who have a special interest in the technicalities of that discipline. But what I will concentrate on here are the points that I feel will help us unravel some clues about what Seneca was up to at this almost treading water stage of his life. And it's important to remember that the period between AD 49 and AD 54 was one of relative calm for Seneca. He'd been recalled from 8 years of exile in Corsica and catapulted right up the Roman pecking order by being made a praetor and appointed tutor to the young heir apparent Nero. But Seneca knew from bitter experience how fragile life at the top could be. He was surrounded by both court and senatorial factions, all of them jockeying for favour and power. And despite having the protection of the powerful Empress Agrippina, he wasn't about to go sticking his neck out and making himself a target for somebody else's power play. He'd been there, done that, got the t-shirt. So Seneca hunkered down to do the job for which he'd been employed, that is, teaching Nero philosophy and statecraft. Now these must have been fairly relaxed years for Seneca. He was close to the imperial core of the Roman Empire, he was materially and financially secure, and, with Claudius still on the throne and directing affairs, Seneca was well out of any contentious decision-making and its potential repercussions. So in short, and despite of his duties as tutor and senator, Seneca must have found himself with plenty of time on his hands. He had autium. He had leisure. And so he wrote. It must have felt as if all the dreams and fantasies about being recognised for his literary and rhetorical skill that Seneca had harboured during his long exile were finally coming true. He was an inner member of the imperial court, tutor to the teenager earmarked to become the next emperor. Everybody, senators and plebs alike, would be interested, if not intrigued, to know how and what the man moulding their next ruler was thinking. Therefore, anything Seneca wrote was 100% guaranteed a wide and eager audience. So let's take a closer look at what I believe he did write over that period. The first of the three books with which this podcast is concerned is addressed to somebody called Serenus, and it's called De Constantia Sapientis, or On the Constancy of the Wise Man. The wise man referred to in the title is the Stoic philosopher's Stoic philosopher, if you like. He's the dude who has perfected his reason, that's reason with a capital R, to such an extent that he can take on the chin anything life throws at him, good or bad, and just get on with it as if nothing has happened. So the book describes the benefits of changing your ways to aspire to this ideal, and it gives some basic advice on how to start the process. In essence, De Constantia Sapientis is a Stoic school recruitment drive. Serenus, as the book's addressee, serves to represent the potential inductee. The work is designed as much to attract brand new recruits to that philosophical school's way of thinking, as it is to seduce adherents to other schools, especially Stoicism's main rival in ancient Rome, Epicureanism, into changing allegiance. As a work of philosophy, the book is sound enough. It's not groundbreaking, you won't find anything earth-shatteringly new in it, but it's a good example of how Roman Stoic philosophers differed from their Greek forebears. You see, whereas the Greeks tended to get bogged down in theorizing the heck out of all their subject matter, the Romans actually got around to offering some practical advice on how to go about achieving what it was you were after. The second of the three books referred to in this podcast is also addressed to Serenus. Its title is De Tranquillitate Animi, or On the Tranquility of the Mind. It's considered a natural sequel to De Constantia Sapientis because in it, Serenus is depicted as somebody who has converted to Stoicism but needs encouragement to stay on track. The book is written in a kind of teacher-student or doctor-patient dialogue, in which Serenus begins by moaning and bitching about how hard it is to stay focused on Stoic ideals, and then Seneca finishes off by giving him encouragement and enlarging on some of the basic concepts. Again, there's nothing particularly groundbreaking here. It's just Seneca offering more practical advice on how to keep your self-betterment momentum going. The third book, in what I've called in this podcast the Serenus Trilogy, is a little more problematic. It's called De Autio, or On Leisure, and the main issue is that it's severely truncated. That is, only perhaps half the work has survived. And to make matters worse, it's never been conclusively proven that De Autio was actually addressed to Serenus. The evidence for Serenus as devotee rests solely on some extremely dubious archival copying. But I'm not sure the actual addressee, whether it was Serenus or somebody else, really matters too much for this work, as the content of De Autio seems to further advance the Stoic teaching of the previous two works and emphasizes the importance of using free time to advance philosophical study. It also addresses the issue of the correct balance between philosophy and political office, and how the two should intersect. And that is an important consideration where it concerns when De Autio was written. So what do we have? Three works, of which at least two are addressed to somebody called Serenus. All of them are more or less philosophically purists, and all of them contain very little outside reference. So let's start with Serenus himself. And the first question has to be, was Serenus a real person, or simply a handy name that fitted the subject matter? The Latin adjective Serenus, which was also a male first name, means tranquil or serene. Serenus then could be translated as Mr. Tranquil or Mr. Serene, epithets that would ideally suit books that attempted to demonstrate how to achieve a balanced state of mind free from anxiety. And I bring this up because these works are not the only ones in which Seneca used addressees that seemed to fit his subject matter suspiciously well. In a later work, De Beneficiis, for instance, which is all about the deeply entrenched Roman tradition of favour exchange, that's a strictly hierarchical system of you scratch my back and I'll scratch yours, Seneca's devotee is one Liberalis or Mr. Largesse. Similarly, an entire series of moral correspondence, a body of work thought to be a dialogue between Seneca's older and less evolved selves, was addressed to Lucilius or Little Lucius, a diminutive form of Seneca's own first name. Another alternative is that Seneca simply selected somebody in his circle of acquaintance whose name was a good fit for the work in hand. And that could definitely be the case with Serenus, because the historical record informs us that somebody called Annaeus Serenus did exist and was definitely an item in and around the imperial court around the period in question. His name, Annaeus Serenus, may even indicate he was a relative of Seneca's, and he may even have owed his political rise to Seneca. But more about this interesting part player in later podcasts. The next thing to address is the chronology of our three works. There's no problem in establishing a date at the bottom end of our time window. In both De Constantia Sapientis and De Tranquillitate Animi, there are references to the previous reign and even assassination of Caligula, who died in AD 41. So that's our starting point. Some modern commentators have pointed to the relating of a very embarrassing encounter between Valerius Atticus and Caligula in De Constantia Sapientis as evidence that work was not written before AD 47, the year of Atticus's death, on the grounds that it would have been too humiliating. And that may be the case, although I think it's not the only evidence for composition after that year. As far as the latest date for composition of the three works is concerned, there is simply no evidence in the text of any one of them that can definitively place them in any specific year prior to Seneca's own death in AD 65, but I think we can narrow it down somewhat. We've seen from previous podcasts that Seneca's political needs tended to surface in his works. The Consolation to Marcia was a response to that woman's father's works being republished and Seneca needing to broadcast his allegiance to the Germanicus faction in Roman politics. The Consolation to Polybius was a blatant attempt to beg for recall from exile. The Consolation to Helvia was both a distancing from the adultery charge that had had Seneca exiled in the first place, and a trumpeting of Roman womanly virtue as epitomised by Agrippina over the lax morality of the recently deceased Messalina. The difference between those earlier works and the Serenus trilogy mentioned in this podcast is that in the Serenus books, there is no evidence whatsoever of any political imperative. They are purely and simply works of philosophical purism. They are, simply put, Seneca grandstanding his learning and erudition. Simple as that. Even De Autio, sadly truncated though it is evidence of Seneca under no political pressure. In it, Seneca, although he stresses the importance of using autium or leisure to further philosophical study, nevertheless strongly advocates the marriage of political office and philosophical ideal. And this would indicate it was still safe to do so, because once Nero became emperor, that was not a stance it was wise to broadcast too loudly. In fact, by AD 62, it had become positively perilous to suggest any philosophical interference in politics at all. To my way of thinking, then, there's only one period of Seneca's life in which he could author philosophical works under no political pressure, and that was between the years AD 49 and AD 54. We know from previous podcasts that when the political heat was on, it tended to bubble up into Seneca's works like weeds sprouting from beneath a mat. But the years AD 49 to 54 were almost a holiday for Seneca. All he had to do was tutor Nero, keep his nose clean of any political shenanigans going on around him, and enjoy the rewards of life in the imperial household. It couldn't last, of course. So please join me in the next podcast, where we'll look at the watershed year of AD 54, which saw the death of Claudius, the accession of Nero, and the end of Seneca's little period of respite. I hope to see you there.